Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I am Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Eliezer Manner, international top-ranking venture capitalist, business and technology leader, industry-leading visionary innovator, and global executive. Eliezer, you have a lifetime of outstanding contributions in a number of fields. Thank you for sharing your considerable expertise, deep accumulated insights and wisdom with our audience.
Okay, thank you very much for the interview. I will just mention at the beginning the fields in which I'm active and just give you a list of them, which are high-tech entrepreneurship, incubation, high-tech industries, venture capital, corporate venture capital, investment banking, international cooperation for creation of force multipliers between Israel, United States, Europe, Australia, and of course China.
So that's remarkable. Eliezer, can you tell us more about your long career success and how you got started and where you are today in your work?
Okay, I started as an entrepreneur and went through the whole sequence, being involved in each of them as someone who really did the work. I think that developing a career of entrepreneurship, which is somehow similar with creativity, it is important to go through all the phases and not skip any of them, of this sequence. Each of them requires introduction of novel methods and approaches, not only innovation. Innovation is only part of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship means for me creativity. Even as a venture capitalist, I was always saying that the venture capitalist has to be not less creative than the entrepreneurs in whom he invests. We, the venture capitalists, have to be, as I mentioned, not less creative than the entrepreneurs. But I really started my career as a young physicist and spent many years in the military service as a professional technical officer, where I learned what a mission is and what a completion of a mission is. Very important qualities for entrepreneurship. I must confess with great pleasure that today I am actively involved in all the disciplines listed above, where the common denominator of all of them is entrepreneurship. And this is what I'm doing today. I went through all the phases. I started as an entrepreneur, high-tech entrepreneur, and then I was an angel investor, and then I became a venture capitalist. I worked with multinational companies in Israel that came to Israel looking for new technologies. I was involved in establishing the Israel Venture Capital Association in Israel. I worked with institutions from abroad, like the European Venture Capital Association. I worked with stock markets, with ISDAC in Europe, the European Nasdaq. And then I established another venture capital fund now in the Silicon Valley. And then I decided that I will not rest very well in the next world if I will not go to China. And I went to China in order to establish some activities based on what I think are the force multipliers between Israel and China in the field of high tech.
Wow, that's an incredible history of remarkable achievement, Eliezer, and just amazing all the things that you've accomplished and the impact that you've had. Can you tell us more about your vision and objectives behind your current roles, and then what you hope to accomplish in the future and how you will bring this about?
So if you are asking me about my vision is that using the new dimension of cross-national force multipliers in our global village. So this is my vision, to use this dimension of cross-national force multipliers in the small global village where we live. Introduction of new products is the only way for leading economies to develop. Maybe the best example today is China, which will not be able to keep its growth rate without introduction of new products in local and international markets. Competition will stop its growth rate if China will continue basing itself only on low cost and efficient manufacturing. Look what happened in Taiwan. Taiwan reached a plateau of its economic development that can be penetrated only by introduction of new products. Novel technologies are the raw material for new products. High tech and entrepreneurship are required for development and commercialization of new products. Human creativity is needed. What we call is a brain power. The most attractive field with growth potential is the interdisciplinary fields. Today, cross-national force multipliers are a most promising area, bringing complementary qualities of two or more nations for the real economic development. It is an infinite field today, and this is the arena where I work and want to continue working in the future. I think that after so many achievements of technologies and of business and of trade in the world, after the technologies that were developed for communication, for transportation, now the real meat, what we call, is behind establishing cross-national force multipliers between nations that complement each other.
So which global regions offer the best opportunities for investment, and why is this so?
This question is not exactly relevant for me, since for me, even venture capital is not the art of investment, but an art of entrepreneurship, coming out with new ideas and approaches. The best regions to invest for the medium and long run will be the regions where cross-national force multipliers are established to promote high-tech entrepreneurship on a global industrial, commercial, market, and financial infrastructure. In my opinion, China and India, I speak as an Israeli. While Israel can contribute with many advanced technologies, we can theoretically be commercialized. China and India represent for Israel large markets, strong industrial infrastructure, commercialization capabilities. Combine these with novel technologies, and you have the ingredients of the best cake that can be baked. But how to make it and how to cook it? I cannot speak too much about India, but in China, because I'm not familiar with India, but in China, this is what I'm trying to do for almost 7 years. It is a long way, but entrepreneurs must have a vision, do the action, and never give up. You know, there is an old proverb saying that vision without action is a daydream, and action without vision is a nightmare. You have to accept failure and to know that winners are losers who never give up. And success is managing of failures. So this is the basic qualities that I think have to be realized in order to take advantage of this kind of cross-national force multipliers.
So what about the future?
I think that my opinion about the future is clear from my last answers. Cross-national force multipliers will always create new investment opportunities there is almost no limit for the near and mid-term future. This is the way that we will establish new opportunities by combining qualities from two nations that are complementing each other. And this is maybe a very good case to look on Israel and China, two complementary nations.
So what kinds of opportunities or investments would you recommend for the future?
My recommendation is not driven only by financial profits. I think that there is a paradox in asking such a question. If somebody really knows to answer it, he will not answer it. But do it by himself, there is, do this is like a lottery. And we don't play lottery. You'll ask this question many people, and for sure that in the future one of them will be proven to be right. Because you cannot predict the future, but we have to do the work. In my opinion, the way is creation of opportunities after understanding the arena, crystallizing a vision, work hard, and accept failures.
Now, if we could drill down more specifically, what do you see as the differences between China and Israel from a culture, philosophy, entrepreneurship, and investment standpoint?
Okay, here I'm quite very much experienced. I see many differences in all the fields you mentioned, but this is also a great opportunity. We have differences in language, of course, communication, culture, entrepreneurship. In particular, entrepreneurship, the big differences between Israel and China is acceptance of failure. And this is the essence of entrepreneurship, is to know, to have a culture that will accept failure. The culture of investment is also very different between China and Israel. This applies also to the Chinese government. If the vision will be clear and the action plan will be crystallized, a process can be started. This process, at least at the beginning, can be catalyzed by Israel. The big jump for China would be when they will speak English and be able to really communicate, and when the acceptance of failure will be part of their culture.
That's interesting, your discussion of sort of the acceptance of failure, and I guess that was sort of the key of the rise of Silicon Valley.
Yes.
Now, as a follow-up question, what do you see as the role of China and Israel in the next 100 years?
Okay, 100 is a high number, but it is difficult to make predictions. But I can make wishes. And my wishes are that I hope that China will become a democracy, understand the Western entrepreneurial culture, and continue developing economically based on high-tech and on its industrial basis, leveraging on its high-quality and high-quantity population. The second wish, I hope that Israel will find the way to capitalize on its high-tech achievements by creating cross-national force multipliers, not only with China, India, South America, Africa, etc., but also with its neighbors in the Middle East.
What are the pros and cons of VC and startup entrepreneurship in China?
Let's start with, when we are speaking about venture capital, I discriminate between two. VC that is more related to private equity, and VC that is more related to high tech, and this is the Israeli VC. Regarding private equity, the pros are the emerging economy, and the cons is the stability and strength of stock markets. For a venture capital related to high tech, the pros are the fact that China is a virgin land in terms of venture capital for high tech, and the cons are the risk associated with being a pioneer, familiarity with mergers and acquisition exits, which are today the most appropriate exits, and no certainty about the exits. This is the cons for venture capital. For startup entrepreneurship, the pros are the prospects due to future needs of new products and solutions to problems because of the big Chinese market. The cons are the lack of entrepreneurial culture and government support.
How does this compare to Israel?
Israel here is just the opposite, and this is what what makes me so much excited about cooperation between China and Israel. Emphasizing in particular the entrepreneurial culture in Israel, the question is how to establish this culture in China, because it is clear that Israel cannot have the qualities of China. For sure, Israel cannot become China, because Israel does not have the big population of China, and Israel does not have the big area of China. So Israel will never become China. But China can become Israel by using the Israeli experience. That's what I have to say about this question that you asked me.
Well, that's really interesting, Eliza, where you say that Israel doesn't have the ability to become China, but China can become Israel, and that shows...
In terms of high-tech, of course.
Yeah, but that's tremendous promise. And, of course, you've been in China for a number of years, and you can help guide that journey of using Israel as a model. And, of course,
that's exactly what we are doing in China. We actually were working in China. The cooperation between China and Israel is performed by us in China territory, not in Israeli territory.
So what qualities make for good entrepreneurship?
In other words, what is needed to become a good and successful entrepreneur? That's what you are asking.
Yes.
So what I have to say about this is that entrepreneurship is not a science. It is an art. An art, what characterizes an art is that you cannot teach an art, but you can encourage it and train. So you have to encourage people that are talented, you can encourage and train them. The necessary physical ambient conditions for that are a good infrastructure, to have appropriate infrastructure, and to have education, which is specific education, I mean training. You need people which are talented. Not everybody is talented, like I'm not talented to be a musician. I will never be a musician. But if I am talented to be a musician, I must be trained. Otherwise, I will also never be a musician. We need government policies. We need government support to seed and early stages. We need the local culture, as I mentioned before, of acceptance of failure. And we need the supporting mechanisms, usually established by the government, which are incubators, support to the industrial R&D, and appropriate associations. And we also need to have in the background, venture capitalists and angel investors.
So those are all of the sort of the qualities in the environment that exist in Israel, and you're working to bring that to China.
Yes, yes, that's what we are going to do. Yes, slowly, slowly, step by step, as their leader once said, Mao Zedong, that even a long journey starts with the first step. That's what they are trying to do, yes.
What do you find then is the greatest kind of challenges or difficulties for you in setting, you know, working to try to encourage an infrastructure, to assure the education is there, to find the proper talent, to make sure that there's policies and support for entrepreneurship, this culture of accepting failure, the incubation and R&D and VC and angel environments? What do you find is the most difficult thing for you right now in trying to set up in China?
Look, what my belief is that people are the same in any place. In China, in Israel, in any place, people are the same. What makes a difference is the environment, the ambient conditions. And what I'm trying to do in China is to establish this kind of mechanism and conditions that we have in Israel in order then that people will act the same as they operate and act in Israel.
Ah, so creating the proper context and environment to support the entrepreneurial spirit that's in Chinese people.
Yes, yes. So that's what they're trying to do. We're trying to establish technological incubators using the Israel example. We're trying to establish a venture capital industry in China using the Israel example and the Israeli successful experience. Because what we call venture capital and what is called in China venture capital are two different notions, are two different terms. For us, the Israeli venture capital is the tool to support the high-tech industry. It's not private equity.
Very interesting. And considering your history and your background and the fact of how Israel really is leading the world, you're going to be able to drive this into China and enable it to nurture it. So it's remarkable that you are leading this charge, and we thank you for doing that.
My I hope it will be successful. Look, I'm a private company. I'm looking to do business. And I think that this is a huge business opportunity by introduction of this kind of tools and mechanisms and operations in China. Because the numbers are so high, the force multipliers are so strong that can we imagine doing this at a rate of 200 times stronger than in Israel, because it's a ratio of population.
Right, precisely. The possibilities are endless. And of course, Eliezer, you are continuing to shake the world with your vision and your mission and your goals and having an imprint on
history. Realize slowly.
Just remarkable. You're a remarkable person. Now, what qualities make for good limited partners?
In other words, what is a good LP? So what I want to say about an LP is the track record of success, the opportunity that he sees in his investments, and corporate venture capital. So these are the, first of all, what attracts a limited partner is a track record of success of the managing of the managers, the opportunity, or the corporate venture capital. And what makes him a good LP? I think that what makes him a good LP is a strategic added value that he can bring and his active participation.
And then on the other side, what are the qualities that make good make for good GPs or general partners?
A good GP today, because I think that in the past it was different. A good GP today, and I'll tell you why, because in the past, at the beginning, and I was very active at the beginning of the venture capital industry, at least in Israel, you know, there are so many opportunities and so little venture capital that everything that you were investing could be in 2-3 years an exit on NASDAQ. But now the situation is different because there is a lot of competition. So today I think that a good general partner has to be creative, not less than entrepreneurs. He has to be experienced in high-tech entrepreneurship, not only in financials. He has to have a technical background, to have a business background, including exits, active participation on boards of portfolio companies, and added value like bringing syndication, strategic fundraising, force multipliers, fundraising, and exits.
What are your recommended best practices for starting and then managing an investment fund?
You mean in China?
Yes, in China.
Okay. I will refer not only to venture capital. I will refer actually only to what I call venture capital, not private equity. And in China, in other words, investment in high-tech startups. So the first one is look for the deal flow. Then establishment of a good deal flow and a good team. Then establishment of a good source of internal deal flow, like an incubator. So these are my recommendations for starting and managing an investment fund in China.
Eliezer, you gave such great tips on what were your recommendations or best practices for starting and then managing an investment fund in China. Now let's turn that question around, and what would be your recommendations or best practices for starting and then managing an investment fund in Israel?
I think that this question is very similar to if you would ask this question about managing an investment fund in the Silicon Valley, because Israel is a microcosmos of Silicon Valley. Now, dealing with this question, I think that you have, because of the problem that we have now with exits on stock markets like NASDAQ, I think that we have to find a way to grow the companies that for mergers and acquisitions. Now, this is not simple. So the best approach would be to take in the in the LPs and in the fund management to take a partner which is a strategic partner that can be actually a way, a door for exit for some of the companies. Actually, I believe today much more in corporate venture capital, which deals with open innovation, than in venture capital. I think that this will be the new trend. Corporate venture capital will take over venture capital in the Western world.
That's interesting. And, of course, you have a background also in advising corporations in this area.
Yes, yes. I worked with large companies, with corporate venture capital, yes.
Now, Eliza, can you profile your current investment research, its challenges, opportunities, and implications?
Okay, I'm on this subject, I'm looking on the new trends. In China, we see high-tech entrepreneurship incubation of Israeli type, here I mean, because incubators in China today are very different than the Israeli type of incubators. Incubators in China is just to give somebody a roof or to give them some discount on the rental fees. But for Israel, for the Israeli type of incubator, it is much more. It is like mentoring a young entrepreneur with no experience to become a real manager of a company who will be business-oriented, marketing-oriented, and management-oriented. We see the in China the related venture capital. We see the government support for both financial and as a both financial and as a vision or challenge. This is in China. In China and other places, I see the corporate venture capital, as I mentioned before, which will take over VC by considering the strategic aspect and the need for open innovation.
Well, that's fascinating, this whole sort of trend that you mentioned and the fact that, you know, you would know, being one of the greatest, really, entrepreneurs and visionaries out there in this area. Now, over your long and very distinguished career, Eliza, what are your top lessons that you want to share with the broad audience?
So the main lessons that I would like to share are, in particular, the spirit and the art of entrepreneurship, the role of governments in interaction with the private sector. So here is a very important field here of the interaction between government and the private sector here, the professional mechanism of making an investment, the need of structural tools and mechanisms. It will not happen in a vacuum. We need all the ambient conditions here to be present.
Now, again, over your long career, you've developed a lot of wisdom, and this is wisdom that can only be accumulated by doing it like you have with this remarkable history of success. So, Eliza, if you could sum up your life experiences with career tips for investment professionals, what would be your tips and the reasons behind them?
The most important thing for me is to define the sequence of your progress in life and get experience in each of them by being involved actively with your real hands and not theoretically. So the steps are technical education, innovation, incubation, management and business, angel investment, venture capital investment, government relations, stock markets, international arena, multinational companies, and corporate venture capital.
And, of course, your career provides a model for every one of those because you've done it all, literally.
I think that everybody has to, because, look, venture capital in high tech, you know, is like you have to be, like you have an orchestra. Now, you have many instruments that are playing, and if these instruments are not tuned, you do not have music. If they are not synchronized, you do not have music. You have noise. So you want to create music and not noise. So you have to know every player here what his role is and to work in harmony here. So you have to be familiar with everybody.
Eliza, would you consider publishing maybe some books in this area to sort of, you know, share all of the experiences you've had in some way or parts of your experiences?
I think that maybe in a few years from now, when I will acquire a little bit more experience, because what I'm doing now, look, we have this vision, we have this plan, we have these actions that we want to take. We are just starting now in China. I'm active in China for 7 years, but it's a long way in China. It takes a long time. And we are starting now some activities, some more structural activities, like establishing technological incubators and venture capital funds that will work in harmony with these incubators. And I think that we have to acquire a little bit more experience here in order to really share experience, and real experience, not theoretical experience. If there is something like theoretical experience.
You know what, Eliza, though, I could see once you feel the time is right and you launch this book, it would be a bestseller and it would sell literally like hundreds of millions of copies, you know, because you're just such an experienced and wise individual. So.
Thank you.
Eliza, can you make your predictions for the future? And I know you've done some of this now before, earlier in the interview, but I know it's difficult. But can you make your predictions for the future, their implications, and how we can best prepare?
Look, I'm not a prophet, but what I think, my prediction is that, as I mentioned, I'm from the Holy Land, but I'm not a prophet. So what I think is that high-tech will be the major player in development of economies. It will be, we see we are now in the middle of a transition from territory-driven economies to technology-driven economies. Territory doesn't mean so much as meant 100, 200, 300 years ago or more. Today, what makes sense is your power is the technology that you have. Then what I think is the definition of new structures, to be creative by understanding new conditions and to understand the world trends and developments. As we say, as I mentioned to you, that I spent some years in the military in Israel, we say that you never fight a new battle only by the lessons learned in the old battle, because then you lose the battle. You must be creative. I think that corporate venture capital and open innovation will become a stronger source of direct and indirect investments in high tech.
You know, in looking at your background, you also are involved with doing sort of volunteer work in the sense of contributing to funds that improve the world. Can you talk a little bit about that?
This is a program that is called Schools Online in Israel, and what we wanted to establish here, we, based on our understanding, the roots of the conflict are lack of communication between people. Because if people communicate, then there is no conflict between them. When the conflict starts, when they do not communicate, and the leaders are taking advantage of that by saying, we hate them because they want to kill us, and they want to kill us, and they want to kill us. And then that's the way that the conflict starts. So what we wanted to create here is communication between different sectors. So, and as I say, we are too old to be educated, so we took children, high school, from high school, and created a program where two classes will have a joint program. The subject of the program is not so important, but what was important is that it will not be in the heart of the conflict. So, for example, religious people that are coming from the religious sector and from the non-religious sector will not work on a subject that is there a God? God exists or God does not exist? So we wanted to have a subject that is not part of the conflict between the sectors. So, and we created a program with cooperation between two classes from different sectors, with the cooperation, with the involvement of the teachers. I think also what was advanced technology by then, because we started this program, I think, about about 12, 14 years ago, something like that, when internet just started to penetrate schools. So we donated computers to schools, and we taught the people using internet. Usually, these classes that work from that are from different sectors, they are not so close geographically. So we use the internet for them to communicate, but we also had meetings between them, physical meetings. That people and children, when they touch each other, they understand that there's somebody that is different from the way that they are or they look, if they are white or black or whatever, then they will start to appreciate and to respect the differences between them. So you see that he's also a human being. And that's the way that we started this program. And we, as I mentioned, we donated computers. We started to teach the children. And it became quite a big program in Israel, also with connected between Arab and Jewish communities. And today, after many years of operation as a philanthropy, it is now supported by the Ministry of Education. And we are donating a little bit, but the Ministry of Education, the Israeli Ministry of Education, is supporting this program.
Well, that's just a remarkable achievement and just a remarkable story. And really, the world needs to thank you, Eliezer, for having the courage to do this work.
Thank you.
Now, what do you see as the top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved?
I see, number one is education. Number two is insemination of high-tech entrepreneurial culture, as I mentioned before, acceptance of failure. It is establishment of different, of efficient government supporting mechanisms for the private sector, but the government, but remembering that the government has to push. The government has to give the power, and the private sector has to give the direction. So this has to be understood, because if the government will give the direction, it will be bad. So these are the three points that I will mention here, the three challenges.
And then we're down to our last question. If you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
I'm not sure that I have a good answer for that, because I think that you ask excellent questions, to which I try to provide you answers from my standpoint and from my experience. I don't think that you missed any of the relevant questions, but to summarize, the recipe that I'm speaking about is the entrepreneurial culture, is the cross-national force multipliers like China and Israel. With that, I will summarize what I said so lengthily, is that we have to establish an entrepreneurial culture by accepting of failures, and by establishing cross-national force multipliers, because this is the real potential now to take advantage of.
Well, Eliezer, it's just been a remarkable experience doing this interview with you, and you know, we're very, very appreciative of a man of your stature, of the impact that you're making on the history of the world through all of the work that you've done over a very long career, and you continue to do this work, making your imprint, and these imprints will have historical reverberations for centuries to come, and it's just a remarkable achievement and remarkable contribution. So, and I know your schedule is very demanding as well, and we are really fortunate that you came in to do this interview, and thank you for sharing your substantial wisdom.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It was my pleasure. Now, if you need any more clarification or something, just don't hesitate. Send me an email.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Eliezer Manor, international top-ranking venture capitalist, business and technology leader, industry-leading global visionary innovator, and global executive.